Before we get into today's episode, I want to invite you on a unique spiritual journey this Advent season. It's called Journey to Bethlehem, and it's a free 9-day text message series designed to prepare your heart for Christmas. Starting on December the 17th, and each day leading up to Christmas, you'll receive a short reflective message pointing you to the hope, peace, joy, and love found in the coming of Christ. It's completely free and a great way to keep your focus on Jesus this season. Sign up today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now here's today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
Well, I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Charlie Reader, a recent graduate of Oxford University who earned a first-class degree in English literature and language. And Charlie's profound interest in the concept of Sehnsucht was explored extensively in his dissertation. And we're going to be talking about this theme, as well as sharing some of the context for a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Charlie's paper there was Sing About the Hidden Country, Longing in Spirits in Bondage. Charlie, we're about to hear your paper from the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference. Do you think it's helpful if we read any of Lewis's works that you mentioned before we listen to your talk, or can we listen to it with completely uneducated ears, as it were?
You could definitely listen to it with uneducated ears. Yeah, I think one of the works that draws together a lot of what Lewis is talking about with longing is The Weight of Glory, which I talk about in the talk, and also Surprised by Joy would be a key one. But you can definitely go in there blind as well.
What you are about to hear is Charlie's paper from the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. And the title of his paper was Sing About the Hidden Country, Longing in Spirits in Bondage.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming to this paper and well done for finding the room as well. My paper is called Sing About the Hidden Country, Longing in Spirits in Bondage. So I'll dive right in. C.S. Lewis is undoubtedly best known for his Christian apologetics and his Christian fiction. But as we know, Lewis wasn't always a Christian. And in 1919, Lewis published this as an atheist, Spirits in Bondage. This is Lewis's first published work, and it's largely ignored by critics in their studies of Lewis. Should we do the same? Should we detach this work from his later famous and arguably better Christian work? Well, like I said, some critics think so. This is what John Bremer said about Spirits in Bondage. The various poems written at different stages of Lewis's life need to be assessed as if they were written by different men, as in a real sense they were. Certainly the poems he wrote before his conversion cannot be lumped together with what he wrote after it. So Bremer is seeking to compartmentalise pre-Christian and Christian Lewis, claiming we should exclude it from the studies of his Christian work. Maybe he, along with other critics, think it will maybe embarrass or undermine Lewis's reputation as a Christian writer. Now, Bremer's claim is based on the fact that Lewis apparently doesn't refer to Spirits in Bondage after his conversion. However, Bremer, I think, misses two subtleties. Firstly, Lewis's reoccurring biblical acoustics, and secondly, his spatial metaphors. I'd like to argue that these devices are present in Spirits in Bondage and recur throughout Lewis's work, making this early poetry an essential precursor to the articulations of longing we find in Lewis's later work. What we're actually going to see is that lumping together, as Bremer puts it, pre-conversion and post-conversion material is fundamental to understanding longing in Lewis's work. So, Spirits in Bondage. To summarize this anthology, Lewis is an atheist, and he's talking about how he's angry at God for creating human beings with desires, with longings that can't be fulfilled. Now, contradiction. Yes, Lewis is an atheist at this point, claiming to be angry at God. Well, if we remember what Lewis says in Surprised by Joy about his pre-Christian days, we'll know that this is a contradiction that Lewis himself observes retrospectively. Quote, "I was at this time living like so many atheists or anti-theists in a whirl of contradictions. I maintained that God did not exist. I was also very angry with God for not existing. But he nonetheless, as an atheist, chooses biblical imagery to channel his bitterness towards the divine. Now, one of the images he employs is the hidden country. This is what he writes in the prologue to the anthology. In my coracle of verses, I will sing of lands unknown, flying from the scarlet city where a Lord that knows no pity mocks the broken people praying round his iron throne. Sing about the hidden country fresh and full of quiet green, sailing overseas uncharted to a port that none has seen." Now, this section of the prologue could be read as a summary of what Lewis seeks to do across the whole anthology. He wants to lead a rebellion against God. So he describes a scene where a weak God who knows no pity is neglecting those praying round his iron throne. Notice the cheapness of metal here to undermine this God's kingship. Now, crucially, he's angry at the Lord because he believes that God has created human beings with desires that cannot be fulfilled. And one of the ways he voices this feeling is to say that it's like looking for a country that can never be found. That's what the hidden country is. It's an obscure, intangible destination. It's, quote, a port that none has seen. But nonetheless, he's going to sing hopelessly anyway, and he's going to sing in his coracle, which will be the vessel of lyrical expression Lewis will sail upon during his voyage to try and find this elusive hidden country. Now, do just keep coracle in mind because we'll come back to that later. But let's stick with Spirits in Bondage for a bit longer, because Lewis continues to take these themes of scorn and despair even further in poems like De Profundis. This is translated as Out of the Depths, and it refers ironically to Psalm 130. Psalm 130 is a traditional poem or song used to mediate a lament to God out of the depths of one's hardship, with the hopeful expectation that God will hear and respond to the psalmist's suffering. But Lewis, in this poem, reverses the psalmist's model of petitionary prayer and dependence on the divine, and instead sings a blasphemous rejection against God. These are the first verses. "Come, let us curse our master ere we die, for all our hopes in endless ruin lie. The good is dead, let us curse God most high." And I think we get the reason behind the anger in the penultimate stanza of this poem. Quote, "Our love, our hope, our thirsting for the right, our mercy and long seeking of the light, shall we change these for thy relentless might?" So the speaker's unfulfilled thirsting for the right and long seeking of the light may uncover the reason behind the bitterness. It's because he feels his hopes for love, hope, and mercy are unreciprocated by God. And so he's left with a despondent sense of unfulfilled spiritual dissatisfaction. Now, if we skip to the end of Spirits in Bondage, the anthology finishes with a poem called Death in Battle. And this is another work that expresses this non-Christian but romantic longing. Let me read the final lines of this poem. "O country of dreams, beyond the tide of the ocean, hidden and sunk away, out of the sound of battles, near to the end of day." Now, as this was written in the First World War, or just after the First World War, and it's called Death in Battle, it's likely that Lewis was maybe writing his own epitaph here, as he imagines some sort of comforting afterlife. But it's never fully explained, because Lewis doesn't really know what it is. So the volume ends with Lewis projecting the same obscure hope beyond the tide of the ocean, and the experience of longing for the elusive country is never fulfilled. However, though this articulation of longing is vague and undefined, it's crucial to bear in mind the image, this evocative picture of an idyllic country. Because Lewis will shift radically from bitter atheist to devout Christian, where these images and spatial metaphors will take on a Christian significance. So let's fast forward to 1931. Lewis becomes a Christian, converting from atheism to theism and theism to Christianity. We all know this story. There was that life-changing walk around Magdalen College, Deer Park. That's Addison's Walk in Oxford. He chats with Tolkien and Dyson. Oh, sorry. Wrong Dyson. There we go, Hugo Dyson. And 2 years after his conversion, in 1933, Lewis writes his first book as a Christian, The Pilgrim's Regress. Now, where did we leave off at the end of Spirits and Bondage? We had an image of an elusive country beyond the tide of the ocean. Well, Lewis picks this image up in The Pilgrim's Regress, of course, because the central concern of this book revolves around a longing that the protagonist, John, has for an unattainable, beautiful island he sees at the beginning of the novel. This is what he sees. And through the rift, he had seen a calm sea, and in the sea, an island where the smooth turf sloped down unbroken to the bays, and out of the thickets peeped the pale, small-breasted oreads.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
As we near the end of the year, I want to pause and thank God for how he's worked through Premier Insight in 2025. From honest conversations on Unbelievable to the wisdom of N.T. Wright, this ministry has helped thousands grow in faith, defend truth, and engage culture with grace. But none of this happens without you. Right now, Premier Insight faces a $106,497 funding gap that must be closed by December the 31st. And thanks to a generous $25,000 challenge grant, your gift today will go even further to equip believers and reach seekers in 2026. Visit premierinsight.org/CS Lewis to give now. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. And now, back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Now the reference to Oreads is interesting here. Why does Lewis mix the island with a Greek mythological aesthetic of erotic desire? Well, I think he's setting up a counterfeit. John doesn't quite know what he's looking for, and so I think Lewis is foreshadowing the misdiagnosis of John's longings. That's what the majority of the Pilgrim's Regress is about. It's about John's longings being misdiagnosed. He falls in love with a woman called Media Halfways, who assures him, "We've come to the real island." But that wasn't true, and John admits later that it only partially satisfied his thirst for the island. This is further explained in the chapter titled Archetype and Ectype, Originals and Imitations. Now, Lewis's ideas about archetypes and ectypes anticipate the 1942 sermon, The Weight of Glory, where Lewis argues that all fundamental longings of the human heart are ectypes, testifying to a restless craving for divine fulfillment. Let me read one of the most famous passages in that sermon. "The books or the music in which we thought the beauty was located will betray us if we trust them. It was not in them, it only came through them. And what came through them was longing. These things, the beauty, the memory of our past, are good images of what we really desire. But if they're mistaken for the thing itself, they turn into dumb idols, breaking the hearts of their worshippers. They're not the thing itself. They're only the scent of a flower we have not found, the echo of a tune we have not yet heard, news from a country we have never yet visited. Now let's just pause there and return to the Pilgrim's Regress. The longing that Lewis describes is only given the name Sensuit halfway through the novel by Humanist, who dismisses it as, quote, mystical nonsense. But Sensuit, of course, would be mentioned later in Surprised by Joy, when Lewis connects the origin of his longing with his childhood experience of looking at the Castlereagh Hills, where he says, they taught me longing, Sensuit. Now rewind to Spirits and Bondage. There's a poem called The Roads, which similarly expresses a yearning desire for hills. Quote, I stand on the windy uplands among the hills of down, with all the world spread out beneath meadow and sea and town, and ploughlands on the far-off hills that glow with friendly brown. So it's reasonable to say that Lewis is borrowing this image from his childhood to give colour to the pre-Christian longing expressed in Spirits and Bondage. You might have spotted the memory of our past in that passage from The Weight of Glory. But what else do we get in that passage? Longing is connected with an image of a country, news from a country we've never yet visited. Lewis is, and has been all along, though he didn't know it, importing the biblical model of longing for a heavenly home. Hebrews 11 verse 16 says this, instead they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. So we have the hidden country in Spirits and Bondage, the island in The Pilgrim's Regress, the country we've never visited in The Weight of Glory. But now, and this is where it gets exciting, the theme of journeying, and specifically sailing, as in the prologue to the Spirits and Bondage anthology, takes on a literal manifestation in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, when they sail towards Aslan's country. Now, one of the most effective literary images of desire comes from Reepicheep, right at the end when he jumps into the sea to taste the waters. He describes them as drinkable light. And Lucy also says that it's the loveliest thing I've ever tasted. Think back to De Profundis in Spirits and Bondage and the thirsting for the right. As they get closer to Aslan's country, they now taste and see that the Lord is good, to quote Psalm 34. But I think there's an even clearer allusion to Spirits and Bondage, and it involves Reepicheep's beautiful entrance into Aslan's country. Have a look at this. The coracle went more and more quickly, and beautifully it rushed up the wave's side. For one split second, they saw its shape and Reepicheep's on the very top. Then it vanished, and since that moment, no one can truly claim to have seen Reepicheep the mouse. But my belief is that he came safe to Aslan's country and is alive there to this day. Can anyone spot it? It's the coracle. Remember the preface to Spirits in Bondage? The same word, or vehicle, used to run away and sing of God's abandonment and cruelty, Lewis now beautifully embeds into a scene about sailing towards a heavenly home, the country that's hidden no more. So the secular articulations of longing in Lewis's earlier work has now been successfully recast into a Christian form of longing. So this is certainly one climax of Lewis's fiction, I think, but we get another climax in The Last Battle. What does Jewel the Unicorn say when he goes further up and further into the new Narnia? He says, this is my real country. I belong here. Then in Lewis's later work, Till We Have Faces, which is more subtle but just as beautiful, what does Psyche say to her sister? The sweetest thing in all my life, she says, has been the longing to reach the mountain, to find the place where all the beauty came from. And think of the vessels of beauty there and The Weight of Glory. Then after an interjection from her sister, she finishes her sentence and says, my country, the place where I ought to have been born, do you think it all meant nothing? All the longing for home? For indeed, now it feels not like going, but like going back. All my life, the God of the mountain has been wooing me. Oh, look up once at least before the end and wish me joy. I'm going to my lover. To conclude, Spirits in Bondage, I'd like to argue, is the key to unlocking the articulations of longing we get throughout Lewis's whole work. The spatial metaphors and biblical allusion converge to provide the building blocks of this fundamental theme of longing that Lewis was preoccupied with throughout his entire authorial life. And I say authorial life because whilst I've argued that longing is clearly the central theme from Lewis's first work to his last, at the end of his life, Lewis, in Surprised by Joy, seems to downplay it. This is what he says. But what, in conclusion, of joy? For that, after all, is what the story has mainly been about. To tell you the truth, the subject has lost nearly all interest for me since I became a Christian. It was valuable only as a pointer to something other and outer. Andrew Lazo wrote an essay called Sensucht as Signpost. He views longing simply as a signpost that points to the love of God that Lewis would ultimately embrace when he became a Christian. For Lewis, all his depictions of place pointed towards his longing for heaven, yes. But heaven wouldn't be heaven if it wasn't for the person who was there. Heaven for the Christian is not just about living forever, it's about knowing Christ. So although in his authorial work, his longing appears to be for a place, the longing for the hidden country fresh, it was the person who was there that he truly longed for. And I'll wrap up with C.S. Lewis saying precisely that. I'd hope that the heart of reality might be of such a kind that we can best symbolise it as a place. Instead, I found it to be a person. Thanks very much.
That was Charlie Reader's paper, Sing About the Hidden Country, Longing in Spirits in Bondage, which was given at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference held at George Fox University. Charlie, where can we go to find out more about you, some of the work you've already done, the work that you're hoping to do in the future?
Yeah, I've recently started a literary newsletter on Substack called The Oxford Reader, which is spelled with two E's because that's how you spell my last name. And it's been great fun so far. I've enjoyed analysing and writing about some of my favourite books and works that I've studied at Oxford. I've written a lot about C.S. Lewis as well. Top five biblical parallels in Narnia and reasons why you should read Narnia, that kind of thing. And I'm planning to push into that a lot more. So I'm really excited to continue to write more and to grow that as well.
I will make sure that I include a link to that, Charlie. But for anyone who's listening, who's not looking at their notes, it's theoxfordreader.substack.com. And as Charlie said, it's reader, R-E-E-D-E-R. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ruth. It's been great chatting.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.